Well, 2020 has been many things, including a bit of a forced lesson in maths and statistics. The coming of COVID-19 dramatically reapprised many of us with the concept of exponential growth. And certainly in those early days of the pandemic, I think one symptom of it was an obsession with statistics and watching them on a day-to-day basis, trying to discern their significance and real-world ramifications. Economist and author Tim Harford is someone who's been focused on the role of statistics in public debate for probably longer than any of us. He's the presenter of the excellent BBC podcast More or Less Behind the Stats, not to mention another podcast and book with great stats in it, 50 Things That Made the Economy. Tim has released a new book, his ninth by my count, and it's called How to Make the World Add Up, 10 Rules for Thinking Differently About Numbers. And I'm very pleased to say he's joining us on Sunday Extra now. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Thanks very much. How are you doing?
I'm going well. Why did you decide to write a book about how to make the world add up and statistics in 2020?
Well, I decided to write it in 2019.
Well, and yes.
I had to rewrite it when lockdown began in March, because one of the things that I realized was that all of this terrible stuff that was happening was really proving me right about some of the things I was trying to say.
And, well, that's a relief when you're halfway through a book, I suppose.
I would hope so. I mean, the book starts by making a simple point, which is that we're used to thinking of statistics as just a sort of way for politicians to win arguments, and, you know, just another way for people to lie to us. And I'm arguing that's obviously, that's one thing people do with statistics, but we can also see more clearly with them. They're like radar for air traffic control, or they're like a telescope for an astronomer. There are things about the world you can't see without statistics. And if we as just ordinary citizens want to see the world more clearly and think more clearly about our role in it, it's good to just understand a little bit about how numbers work. And of course, that's absolutely been the case with the coronavirus. We realize these graphs of exponential growth, these death counts, they're not about somebody trying to get reelected or somebody trying to sell us toothpaste. This is life or death stuff. And we wouldn't have any chance of understanding what was going on if we didn't have these numbers.
It's perhaps surprising that in a book about statistics, you start with chapters, your first two rules are all about feelings and personal experiences. Why is that?
Well, you've got to remember, I went through the experience of the UK voting for Brexit a few years ago.
Right, fair enough.
I'm sure the same sorts of arguments take place in countries all over the world, but you can see it as well just looking at America and the Republicans and the Democrats. I realised, look, what people believe is first and foremost about their feelings, their emotions, their preconceptions, their cultural identity, their political identity, their gut feelings, their sense of right and wrong, what their friends feel. And we're all like that. And we have different friends, we've got different identities. But, you know, that our instincts lead, our emotions lead. And then the evidence comes later. And I'm not saying we ignore the evidence, but I'm saying it's not the first thing we look at. And I thought there's no point in writing a book offering you all kinds of technical statistical tips if I can't also help be a little bit wiser about our own feelings and our own emotions, which is why actually the first chapter of the book begins with a story about an art forger and an art critic, and how the world's leading expert in this particular kind of painting, these Dutch masters, is fooled by a really crude forgery. And this book's full of stories. I love telling stories. But that was a story where an expert got something wrong, and it was absolutely nothing to do with numbers, and it was also nothing really to do with his expertise. It was because he let himself get carried away.
Yes, there's so many fascinating stories in the book about how expertise isn't a guarantee about motivated reasoning. Can you maybe talk us through some of the studies that really caught your attention in terms of elucidating that point about motivated reasoning?
Yeah, I mean, the simplest thing to look at is just what Republicans and Democrats in the US think about climate change. So Republicans aren't worried, Democrats are worried. But you think, okay, but what about the ones who've got higher education, they'd probably be closer together. They'd be more aware of the scientific consensus, and they'd be looking at the facts. But actually, Republicans and Democrats with more education are actually further apart on climate change. And the reason seems to be that they're using that education to reach conclusions they want to reach. And there have been quite detailed studies of this, where you show people political arguments, or you show people a political proposition, and you say, well, can you produce arguments in favor of this idea, and can you produce arguments against this idea? And you know, things like arguments about capital punishment, about abortion, about climate change. And what they find is the more information people have, the easier they find it to produce arguments for their own side. But they don't seem to deploy information in arguing the opposite side. Mm. Or the more knowledge people have, the easier they find it to argue for their own side. But also the easier they find it to produce arguments against the opposite side. So information, knowledge can actually pull people further apart, unless you've also got the emotional maturity to be open-minded and to be calm. I know sometimes I feel like I sound a bit like Yoda with a calculator. It's all about trusting your feelings and you're not giving in to anger and the dark side of the force. But I mean, it's really true. If you don't get the emotions straight, if you're not willing to be open-minded, if you're not willing to change your mind, if you're not willing to be curious, if you don't really care what's true and what's not, then I can't really help you by giving you a load of technical advice. There is technical advice in the book, but you know, we need to get our thinking calm and clear first.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Tim Harford about his new book, How to Make the World Add Up, 10 Rules for Thinking Differently About Numbers. And Tim, one of the things I thought was particularly engaging in the book was your discussion of the importance of asking who's missing in numbers, and you collect some really impactful stories about studies that are based on weird subjects. Weird, there's an acronym. What does weird mean, and why is it very important to remain alert to who's missing from stats?
Yeah, so weird stands for Western industrialized, educated. I'm trying to remember
rich democracies. That's
rich,
it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, rich democracies. Yes. Thank you. So that's a good test for me. It's getting late over here. It's a Saturday night. I haven't been drinking, I promise, and stayed sober for you.
So disappointed.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll have a drink to celebrate. This conversation when we finish.
You've earned it.
So a lot of psychological studies, a lot of sociological work, a lot of academic work in general has been done on people from Western rich democracies. And then we generalize about human nature from those studies. The other thing that's often done, particularly in some of the really influential classic psychological studies of the 50s, 60s, 70s, is they were all done on men. They just didn't bother to involve women at all.
Yeah, the famous Stanley Milgram experiment was 40 males, is that right?
The electric shock, or the fake electric shock experiment, where people were willing to dish out electric shocks. I mean, it's an astonishing, groundbreaking, controversial study. Nobody even mentions the fact that it was all men. Or Solomon Ash, Milgram's mentor, who did a fascinating study that I'm always talking about when I give talks, about conformity and how we're influenced by the people around us. Solomon Ash taught at a co-educational college, but for some reason decided to recruit only male students to participate in the experiment. And to give you another example, I'll keep it clean because I realize it's breakfast time.
Yeah, that's but right.
The original study of sildenafil, which is an important drug, was supposed to be done to test whether it could relieve angina, heart problems. And I didn't really work for angina, I don't think. But what they discovered when they did this was that all the men in the study were, well, not to put too fine a point on it, were getting erections. And so they repurposed sildenafil and they called it Viagra. But here's the thing. I mean, Viagra's been around for 25 years. Hmm. It's a very successful drug, and I think it improves a lot of people's lives. There is a little tiny bit of evidence that Viagra is also very effective for dealing with period pain. But there were no women in that original study. So if it is effective at dealing with period pain, there's no way to accidentally stumble upon that information. So, I mean, I've learned this from Caroline Criado Perez, who wrote a fantastic book called Invisible Women, which is specifically about women being missing from statistical work. But I've broadened it out to say, well, who else is missing? Are particular ethnic groups missing? Are we ignoring people of a particular age? Are we just, we're looking only at Twitter users, and then we're not thinking about what about the people who don't use Twitter? And there are all sorts of different ways you can miss somebody out from your statistical work and reach a completely bogus conclusion because you haven't been curious enough about who's not in the room.
Tim, the book promises 10 rules for thinking about the numbers differently, but you do sneak in a bit of an 11th rule with a golden rule at the end. What is the golden rule in terms of thinking about numbers?
So the golden rule is to be curious, and that really summarizes a lot of the different ideas in the book, just to try to be open-minded, to be willing to change your mind, to ask more questions, to get a bit of context, rather than using a statistic to try to win an argument, to go behind the numbers and to say, well, you know, who is missing, as we discussed? What was this last year? What does this look like in other countries? Can I compare this number to another number? All of the other ideas in the book, they're really captured in the idea of being curious. But the other thing about curiosity is it turns out, there's some fantastic studies of this at Yale University, curiosity is a real antidote to the political polarization that damages so much of our discourse. People who are curious are more willing to see the opposing point of view. They're more willing to take other people's views seriously because they don't find contradictory information or surprising information. They don't find that threatening. They don't enter into a state of denial. Instead, they go, oh, that's interesting. I want to know more. So I just encourage people to have that open-minded spirit of curiosity. That really help you think more clearly about the world. And it's also just, it's fun. It's fun to ask questions.
Indeed it is. And it's very fun also to read your book. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra, Tim Harford.
Thank you.
And Tim, who did a great job staying up late in the UK to join us for breakfast on Sunday Extra, is the author of the book, How to Make the World Add Up, 10 Rules for Thinking Differently About Numbers. And it's got an excellent little excursus on the difference between scientific literacy and scientific curiosity, which he's a great fan of. And Tim really is a great communicator as well in the world of numbers.